This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening, and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe is the best way to get to really know the guest. This week's guest is someone I've known for a long time in the specialty finance world, where I do a lot of executive recruiting, and he's a leader. He's been a mentor to many, many people in that space, and he's a friend of ZRG Partners, as well as being a kick-ass executive athlete. So his name is Rich Gumbrecht, and he's the CEO of the Secured Finance Network. And he's served in that capacity since 2017. It used to be the Commercial Finance Association, which does a lot of asset-based lending and specialty finance. But previously, Rich was the Chief Growth Officer at EverBank Commercial Finance. He was responsible for building its commercial lending business. He served as the Chairman of the Equipment Leasing and Finance Foundation Board of Trustees from 2013 to 2015. But he's a 25-year veteran of the commercial finance industry, and led diversified lending platforms at GE Capital and co-founded a very successful equipment finance company. In addition to being a senior executive, Rich is an avid cyclist, triathlete, and marathoner who just completed the New York Marathon, and we'll chat about that. One thing I didn't know in doing a little bit of research, he actually hiked Kilimanjaro a few years ago. So Rich, welcome to the show, and love to hear who Rich is from Rich. So give us a quick 35,000 foot overview of who Rich Gumbrecht is.
I'm glad to be doing this with you, Ken. This is a lot of fun for me. And boy, when I listen to your description of my background, it sounds like I've been alive a long time.
We all have.
I think, look, you captured it. I'm a commercial finance executive. I'm a growth guy. I've built a number of different platforms over the years, but in addition to my day job, I do enjoy the type of outings that you described, and I'm kind of late in life convert to these endurance events. I was a runner in high school. I kind of got away from it when I was in college, and through my early part of my career, I imagine like a lot of your listeners, while I was in the decades where I was building my career, I was a lot more focused on putting in the time at the office and getting new platforms off the ground and everything that took, and trying to spend whatever spare time I had with my family. And I really just didn't have the time to put into a lot of the training that's required for a lot of these types of events. And it really wasn't until I was probably in my late 40s that I started to make some time for getting into this stuff. And yeah, I'd love to talk to you about some of the things that I've done. But for me, it was much more of these were things that I kind of always wanted to do, didn't have the time to do. But once I did, I found that it probably would have been something that would have benefited me earlier in my career when I was working 7 days a week, if I had figured out a way to work this kind of recreation into my schedule. I think I probably would have been a lot more effective, but you learn things as you go.
So talk to us about that, right? You know, as being active and the importance of being active as well as being professional. I think, you know, you just mentioned something there, and I'm a big fan of it as well, but having that activity built into your day, I think, is probably more important than not.
Yeah. I mean, the epiphany for me was after, so GE was no picnic. I worked long days and traveled all the time in the role that I had there, in the several roles that I had there. But when I started my own company with a couple of partners, Jim McGrain, Jeff Hilsinger, that flipped to being truly a 7-day a week effort, and you know, and you could basically, it was really hard to turn the off button because there's always more to do. And there were a lot of people depending on us as we were building our company that, you know, this is how they were making their livelihoods and supporting their families. So it was just a lot of responsibility. But we the epiphany for me was we did one of these 360 analysis to look at strengths and weaknesses, and I was off the chart in terms of a lack of work-life balance. So when we looked at all the dimensions of my leadership, the area that was the weakest was work-life balance. And there's a corollary to that, which is if you're weak in that area, you're super hyper in terms of being driven and your work ethic. And that wasn't something that was necessarily a positive. And I think it compromised some of my effectiveness. And I think it sent the wrong message to the people I worked with. And so that was my wake up call. And it was, for me, it was, I've got to find a way to get that balance back in my life. And the way I did it was I took the first small step was on weekdays, I set a time certain that I would leave the office every day, no matter what, and come home and work out. And by doing that, my thought was, well, I'm going to do my workout, and then I'm going to get back to work in the evening at home. And what I found over time was 90% of the time, the stuff that was so urgent that I had to address by the end of the day, by the time I had completed my workout, I had decompressed and it wasn't as urgent as I thought it was. And I got a good night's sleep because I had worked out. And so it all created kind of a virtuous circle for me. And so that's what started it. And then it built from there.
No, and that's huge, right? And I think, what is it? No one's ever said they've regretted a workout. I think, you know, that's a big thing. It's, you know, people regret that they got to go do it, but once they're done, it's never a bad thing, right? Everyone's like, yeah. Just like you said, right? You can figure out the issues in your head, and they almost become smaller or non-existent. That's huge when you're at the office or... Yeah. And sort of even in your personal life or anything like that, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've gone out for a bike ride or gone for a run, fired up all about something. And by the time you get home, you don't even remember what you're fired up about. You know, a deal going sideways or stuff at home or with the kids or whatever, you know, is going on. And it creates that peace. And, you know, I'm not a big meditator, and a lot of people, you know, talk about meditation. And I think that's when I do it. I do it when I'm, you know, on my bike, or I do it when I'm going on or doing it for in my gym, because you try to go back and try to remember what you thought about, or when you're in pain trying to do something, it's like you don't even remember what you're upset about. I think that's where I think that's what a lot of people get from meditation, and it's sort of a moving meditation of what is what I like to call it.
And I think the you know your group a lot of the participants here are endurance athletes, and by definition that takes time. And so how you know you're in your head when you're exercising over these long periods of time, and that is a form of meditation, and you have to meditate. Frankly, I mean, different events. So you mentioned that I do triathlons, so when you're in the water, you're completely in your head. You know, you've got no external stimulus. It's just it's you thinking about the mechanics of what you're doing, or whatever else you know you're is on your mind. And for me, it's cathartic. And because I do long swims, I mean, you can be in the water for an hour and a half. And that's a kind of almost a complete isolation experience, or even on long bike rides. I mean, obviously you got to be alert about where you are, but you know, when I was training for, I did my first half Ironman this summer, and I was riding regularly 5-hour bike rides, and And even training for this latest marathon, you know, if you're out a couple or 3 hours on the road, one of the things that I've never done is I don't put in earphones and listen to music. I want to be as aware as I can be about my environment. But I don't want the sort of programmed distraction of listening to something while I'm doing it. I kind of like to be in my own head.
I'm the same way. I don't really listen to anything unless I know, you know, I'm going to go for an extended period of time. I put a book on tape, listen to a book, and it's sort of crazy of, you know, what you remember, you know, from the book too. It's sort of, you know, it's one of those types of things, but yeah. I'm a big fan of that. I never use music. I don't really use, you know, headphones, because what ends up happening to me, the things die anyways, or there starts becoming issues with them, and then that becomes a whole other mess too. It's yeah. like, you know, yeah. like, why am I carrying these stupid things around when I don't need to be doing it? And you had a pretty good injury not too long ago as well, right? When you were training.
That was challenging for me. So I mentioned I was really in my 40s, early 40s, when I kind of had this epiphany, and I started bike riding when I was in my late 40s, in my late 50s now. But I for me, that was the thing that was the bridge into the triathlons, because there were a number of people in my bike group that I rode with on the weekends that did triathlons. And I determined, okay, this is something I really want to do. And so I started amping up the miles and taking it more seriously. I mentioned I'd been a runner in high school, but I had torn a couple of meniscus in both knees when I was around 30 playing softball. And so I really couldn't run much anymore. And I would do an occasional 5K, but, you know, it always hurt. But a few things happened kind of at once for me. I read a book, and I'm going to forget the name of it right now, but it was about, it taught me how to be more of a mid-foot striker. And I was a heel striker in the past when I ran, and was putting a lot of pressure on my knees. So I made that shift, and I also changed to a different brand of running shoe. And it sort of saved me from not being able to run. The mechanics shifted enough that allowed me to start to run. So I was starting to run more. I was biking more. I used to swim as a kid, but I was never a competitive swimmer, and taught myself how to swim bilaterally, and so started picking up the skills and did my first sprint triathlon. I was 52, and did great, over prepared for it, but did really well, and then scheduled an Olympic for just a short time after that. And I was out on my bike, and we have a lot of hills here in rural New Jersey where I live, and so you can fly down some of those hills, but they're also pretty narrow. The roads are pretty narrow. And I don't know what happened, because I got knocked out, and I actually have no recollection of what how the accident happened. But I was able to look at my Garmin afterward and see that I'd been doing about 43 miles an hour on a downhill, and I crashed. I broke 13 bones, had a bad concussion. Somebody found me on the road and brought me to my house, and then, you know, they took me to the hospital. But it took a while to recover from that, but I did. And what I determined is I just wasn't going to be as reckless in my training, because I just the biking is just so enjoyable to me. It had become such an important part of my life and the whole training routine. And so over the course, it took me a couple of years, Ken, to actually get everything back in sync that I could start to compete again. But once I did, I was very conscious of safety in everything that I was doing, And it got me back into the sport. And I ended up doing my first Olympic 4 years after the accident. So it took a long time to get it back. But once I did, I've been able to enjoy a lot of events, and I've been raising the bar for myself. And as I said, I did my first half Ironman this summer, and just did the New York Marathon a couple of weeks ago. And now I'm testing myself to see, all right, I've done the marathon distance. I can swim 2 or 3 miles. I've done that in training. Never biked more than 80 miles. But so now the goal is I'm going to see if I can do a couple of 100-mile plus bike races. And if I've got the parts, and I'm able to do the marathon and the distance on the bike, and I've got the swim distance down, then I've still got an eye toward doing an Ironman before too long.
That's amazing. No, and I think the swimming part is what scares most people. I know that's one thing I've done. I've done all these adventure races and multi-sport races that don't have swimming involved, that have kayaking or whitewater rafting or any of that stuff.
Because
I swim like a rock. I got to follow the Tim Ferriss model there, right? You know, sort of mastery in a week or something like that. But that's, and that's amazing to come back from an injury like that. Breaking 13 bones, it's got to be crazy, in your 40s to just recover from that, number one. Number two, to just come back to to competing.
Yeah, actually, I was 52 when that happened.
Wow.
It was a thing, and obviously, I had to work that out with my family, who didn't want me to do it anymore, and just convince them that I'm being a lot more careful about it. But it's a lot of fun for me, Ken. It's I do enjoy it, and it gives me the balance that I'm looking for. But my kids are grown and out, and so I've got more time that I can put into it. And a little bit of flexibility with the role that I have now as well. Particularly in the summer when you got the longer days, I can put in the hours that I need to be prepared for these events. So it's all good. And look, the swimming, I agree with you. That's for a lot of people, that's the most traumatic part. And it's a big difference between swimming in the pool and doing your laps in the pool and being out in open water. And not only in open water, but with, 500 other people that are crawling over your back and elbowing in the head. And as you're trying to get through that part of the race. And what's neat about that, I live close enough to open water that I can deliberately go out on a day where you've got white caps and you've got, crazy stuff going on in the water and practice in that environment where you've got kind of a chaotic situation that you're dealing with. And it helps you prepare you for being in the water in a triathlon. So that's part of it. It's so much of it is in your head. You can't let yourself be psyched out by the environment. And I've run and raced and rode in pouring rain and terrible conditions. And you can't let yourself get psyched out by it. And again, I think that's just great overall for your work life connection, because isn't a lot of what we do professionally dealing with chaos and unexpected things, and how do you keep your cool and how do you stay within yourself, and so the two are very connected, the mind and body, and how that connects between physical fitness and mental fitness.
No, I think that's huge, and like you were saying, it's overcoming the chaos on the bike or in the run or in the rain or in the snow or in the ice. And then you go back to work. It's like, it makes life just seem easier. It seems a little bit easier. I remember Lance Armstrong was talking about a race he was doing in Europe, and it was like 38 degrees and pouring rain. And he was talking to one of his teammates, and he goes to his teammates, "We're going to have a great day today," or "This is going to be a great day because look at all these other guys. They've already quit. They haven't even started yet because they're, you know, complaining about the cold. They're complaining about the rain. And that's where you have to thrive. And it's like, all right, let's take advantage of this because you know it's already psyched most people out. Yep. So here's an opportunity for you to go win. Go put your stamp on that. I was always my biggest, most favorite was when the weather is the most adverse or the conditions were most adverse, because now it's a level playing field. Everyone, you know, you're either going to suffer or you're not, and who can suffer the most. And a lot of times who can suffer the most is going to be the one who's going to end up performing the best or winning or going through that. And same thing, you know, it's the same thing with deals. And, you know, throughout, you know, you've seen it and throughout, you know, my career, your career, it's, you can either let a deal that's going sideways take you out, or you can, you know, actually thrive on it and see, hey, you know, at this point we got nothing to lose. Let's see what we can actually pull off, because, you know, if it's starting to go in sideways, chances are there's a pretty good chance it's going to go backwards.
Yeah.
You have nothing to lose. Right. And it's like, here, let's double down. Let's try it. And let's see what we can actually pull together.
Yeah. Well, again, there's all sorts of parallels, right? I mean, and I completely agree with your point about the adverse environment and conditions and what that does to you. And I can't tell you how many times my reaction is when it gets crazy like that, it makes me laugh. I actually laugh out loud, because it's like, I remember, gosh, remember the movie Forrest Gump, and you got, who's a Captain Dan, he's up on the prow of the boat, or he's up on the mast, and there's a storm brewing, and the boat's thrashing around, and he's cursing his fate. He's like, is that all you got? And when I think about, you know, being out in the ocean in white caps, you know, and knowing that I'm going to be fine, because I know I can handle it, and just laughing because it's like, yeah, of course I can handle this. Is this all you got for me? And there's something about being at that point where you can feel like you can take on anything that's being dished to you, and you're going to be good, and that you can get through it. And it certainly has all sorts of applications. The other thing is the pain and suffering. I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this go through injuries. Everybody does. And a lot of this is just about what you can work through. And even this recent marathon, I had had an IT band injury like a month before. And I was going to physical therapy every other day. This guy who did a terrific job was doing deep tissue massage, and until tears were running down my cheeks, trying to get the thing ready so that I could go out and run. And then even when I did run, I was probably 6 or 7 miles into it, and the knee started to lock up. And all I could think of is, all right, what's the most pain that I've been in over the course of my life? And I had kidney stones. That was probably one of the worst. But thought about some different things, and I was like, yeah, this isn't that bad. And so whatever it is, I can get through it. I can run through it. And I knew I wasn't going to do any permanent damage, but it's sometimes, so often it's mind over matter. It's pushing yourself through it. It's testing your limits. It's having that confidence that you know that you can persevere. And that just translates and rolls through to so many things in life.
And you're doing it voluntarily, right?
Yeah, the getting up in the dark and the bad weather and all the stuff. Obviously, endorphins probably have a lot to do with it, because you want to grab that high. But it's... yeah, it does become addictive and very satisfying.
And you had mentioned too, like I said, in the intro, we'll shift gears a little bit here, talking about Kilimanjaro, and that you're raising money for an education program and that type of stuff. Talk to us about, you know, the hike in Kilimanjaro. What was it like being in a third world country and going through that process?
Well, I wish I could give you more on that. You mentioned that, and I meant to correct you on it in the beginning. So I didn't go to Kilimanjaro.
Oh, you did it. Okay.
It's going to happen. That's going to happen in the next year. Oh. But the reason that I didn't, I trained for that as much as you can train for that. I mean, Kilimanjaro isn't Mount Everest, but it's still 20,000 feet. And so the biggest issue is just altitude, and you can't prepare much for altitude. You can wear one of these Bane masks and restrict the amount of oxygen you get while you're exercising, and they say that can help you, but really Diamox is the best you can do, which is for altitude. And I ski a lot, and typically the highest altitude I'll get in the Rockies is 13,000 feet. So the air starts thinning a lot as you get above 13,000 up to 20,000. And that's where people have most of the problems. And so Kilimanjaro was something I was planning to do with my son. And we were raising money for a school in Kenya that has helped impoverished kids in that country get above their socioeconomic situation, educate them. And a lot of these kids actually that go to this particular school, the Clay School, have gone on to go to Ivy League colleges in the U.S. and then come back to their country and help build successful enterprises in their country. So it was a great program that I was raising money for. And so I trained for this for a few months with my son. And it was going to be one of those life experiences that we were going to do this together. And the day, but we talk about injuries, right? So the day before we were getting ready to go to Arusha, which is where you fly to for the starting point, my son, who lives in New York, sent me a text. I was in Boston on a trip. I was coming back. I was all ready to go. Everything had been packed. We got, you got to get special supplies. There's all sorts of things you need to do for a trip like that. And I already had my malaria pills and my all my inoculations and all that. And I remember I was on the tarmac at Logan, and I get a text from my son, says, hey, Dad, what does a pulled calf muscle feel like? And so I texted back. I was like, well, are you saying you pulled your calf muscle? He said, well, I went for one last run before he came out to the house, and we were supposed to fly the next day. And he said, and it's stiff as hard as a rock, and can't really put pressure on it. So anyway, we scrambled. We tried to figure out whether he could make it or not. And he couldn't. He had pulled the calf muscle. So this was one of those things where I had trained with him for months. It's going to be one of these lifetime experiences. And every year I go someplace with, it's one of the things I do with my son. We go someplace unique to go skiing together. And so this was going to be in lieu of skiing that year. We're doing this Kilimanjaro climb. And we put so much time and effort into it together. And I had about 12 hours to make a decision as to whether I was going to go without him. And it was just one of those things where it was like, you know what, it's my wingman's down. I'm not going to go without him. And so I had raised money for the event, and I offered to people who contributed to refund it. And they all, to a person said, no, of course we want to support the charity. But my pledge was I'll do it again. And so, when I say probably about a year away, yeah, a bunch of things I wanted to accomplish in terms of the running and the triathlons this year, probably next year, we're actually going to go back up and we'll get it done.
That'll be amazing. That'll be an amazing trip. That's a lot of people on my podcast or two or three of them have been mountaineers, and it's sort of one of those, it's something I've always dreamed about. And I think probably as my kids get older is, to potentially get them out there. But like you said, you start getting more time, and that's one thing, that's one pursuit I definitely want to go after. I live, I've got a place in New Hampshire, not far from Mount Washington.
Oh, that's a great mountain, Mount Washington.
Yeah. And a lot of people train up there in the winter for the, the adversity that you're dealing with at the high altitudes, even though it doesn't have the altitude, it's got the weather, it's got the terrain, and it's a, and it's absolutely amazing. It's,
well, I mean, they say, the training at Mount Washington is similar to, Rainier, and it's a great training ground for even Everest. And, but But I don't know that that one's going to be on my bucket list. I don't think Everest is. Although, I mean, I've talked to a lot of mountaineers as well, and of course, to do something like that. But I that one may be a little beyond my reach.
Well, and you know, dollar wise too, it's up to like $100,000 now in order to go do the thing. It's crazy.
That's true.
Amazing what's happening there. But what's next? So Kilimanjaro is next on the docket. It sounds like any more races coming up. What are you doing next?
Well, so I'm actually taking a break right now. And so this is, I guess, part of the equation too, because I did put so much time into the training process over the last year anyway, with the number of races that I did. With that last event being a week or so ago, a couple of weeks ago rather, it's this is a good time of year for me to just recover and get some balance back into some other areas of my life. And so I'm not planning anything yet. I will get back in the racing circuit in the spring, but I'm going to take about a month and not do anything significant, and just keep barely maintain kind of the fitness routine. And then I'm starting to look at what events I might do next year. I'm going to be I'm looking at Lake Placid has a good half Ironman. And I am starting to plan the Ironman. I'm starting to think about where that would be. And there are different alternatives where it's a little more flat and a little more forgiving. And so I'm starting to put that on the radar. I want to get a few more marathons in. I want to get a few more halves in before I'm ready to take that on. But that's what's next. And I do want to do some hikes too. There's a few on the radar beside Kilimanjaro. Machu Picchu is another one. Just looking forward to that. And I'll as the time comes, I'll enjoy every minute of it.
Oh, definitely. So we're coming up on over a half an hour here, which is amazing how quickly this stuff goes. These conversations can go forever and ever. But Rich, where can people find you in case they want to reach out and talk to you more about, you know, your professional aspects, your personal pursuits, that type of stuff? Where can they find you?
Ah, well, okay. I'm on LinkedIn and Rich Gumbrecht, and they can contact me at rdgumbrecht@verizon.net or on at rgumbrecht@sfnet.com. That's the Secured Finance Network. I'd love to chat with anybody who's got similar interests and share war stories.
Oh, perfect. And thanks, Rich. This was awesome. Thanks for being part of this. I know we've been chatting about it for a couple of years to pull it off, and we finally did. So thank you very much for being part of this whole, you know, this podcast and the show today.
Yeah, it was fun, Ken. Thanks. I appreciate it.
And if anyone has any questions, comments, feedback, wants to get in touch with Rich, feel free to send me a note at kenexecutiveathletes.com. I'll post all of his, you know, his LinkedIn link, and you can reach out to him directly via that as well once this is up and running. But if, and like I said earlier, if anyone has any questions, reach out. But more importantly, go out there this weekend, crush it, have a great weekend, and just remember, and it's probably going to be during the holidays when this gets posted, so keep training during that so you don't get all the good winter beer weight that many of us do get. So have a great season, and again, thanks, Rich.
All right, cheers. Bye-bye.